Welcome to On the Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, very honored to have one of my favorite comedians on the show today, Pete Holmes. Talked to Pete today about his show, The Pete Holmes Show. It's on TBS, weeknights after Conan. The show's about to start picking up a new order of shows, starting on the 24th of February. And it was great to catch up with Pete, kind of find out, you know, how the show came about, what it's been like to work with Conan, who produces the show as well, as it's put out by Conoco Productions, and just find out more about what Pete's been up to, some of the new stuff with his comedy that's going to be coming out. And yeah, it was just a great time to talk to Pete. I first got to meet Pete just a little over a year ago up at Sundance Film Festival when they were doing a live version of his podcast, You Made It Weird. So if you haven't heard of Pete before, I definitely suggest checking out his show. Like I said, it's on TBS, weeknights after Conan. He's got two great comedy albums out that I highly suggest checking out. His first one came out in 2011 called Impregnated with Wonder. Then he had a new one that was just released last year called Nice Try, The Devil. And it's absolutely fantastic album. A lot of my friends and I will always find ourselves quoting parts of that album. Absolutely hilarious. I really suggest you check it out. And definitely look Pete up on Twitter at Pete Holmes. As well as you can go to his website, PeteHolmes.com. On the website, too, there's a lot of great content that you may not see on the Pete Holmes Show. A lot of the great sketches that they put together for the show. And sometimes sketches that don't even make the show that are just absolutely hilarious. A lot of you probably remember him from his Batman sketches that he was doing for College Humor. So definitely check this out. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Hopefully I didn't get too fanboy throughout the episode. Like I said, you know, I was really excited to finally be talking to Pete. So everybody, check out the Pete Holmes Show as it returns to TBS on Monday, February 24th, and enjoy this episode with Pete Holmes. Hey, how are you, Pete?
Hey, Tim, how are you?
Pretty good. How are things out in California right now?
It's lovely, man. It's just another, you know, you could either look at it as monotonous or perfect. Just take your choice. It's another sunny day.
We're in Salt Lake, so I'm going to go with perfect out there right now.
Yeah. Although, man, Salt Lake is, I actually didn't know that's where you're calling from. One of my favorite places. I love it up there. It's so underrated. I think you guys like keeping it a bit of a secret how perfect and beautiful it is.
Yeah, I mean, lately too, it's been in like the mid 50s, so it's just been absolutely perfect. So we can't complain too much. So and
I love Utah; it's really nice.
I saw from some videos you've been spending some time out here as well. So
oh wait, yeah, all the Olympic things.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, man, is I don't consider that Utah. I consider that a hotel room. We filmed so many interviews with those Olympic hopeful people that I was basically in that interview room with the fireplace behind me, like all day, every day. It was so fun, but it was so nuts. When I go to Utah, I like to be outside.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful out here. I think the last time I actually saw you out here was Sundance last year.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, during the VPN taping.
Something like that, like a cute little city like that, and walk around and duck in to see movies. That's my idea of a good time.
Yeah, this is my first like year where I was really involved in Sundance, and so I finally got to see it from everybody else's perspective, and yeah, it really is a great time instead of just being a local.
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
So now, right now, you guys are getting ready to start episodes back up of the Pete Holmes Show.
Yeah.
Are you guys currently taping a bunch of the digital shorts and stuff for that?
We have filmed, I want to say something like 25 sketches and stuff, which is a good amount, and a similar number of interviews. Because our show isn't topical, of course, we have the luxury of being able to stockpile things. These are just kind of evergreen conversations with friends and actresses and actors and celebrities or whatever. But we're not necessarily promoting anything, so we can, you know, stack it up and kind of have a nice little bank going. Tomorrow is the first day where I will be doing monologues for a live audience and showing the videos to a live audience. So tomorrow is the first day where it's really going to feel super official.
So I still haven't had a chance when I've been out in L.A. to attend one of them, so I'm looking forward to eventually coming out and seeing them done.
No. I hope you can. Yeah, it's a really fun time. The whole thing, we start by telling the audience, like, this is a fun time. People are often pretty tense at TV tapings, but this is like a safe place. I know that's so silly to say, but people feel like a little bit of a fight or flight thing when you're in a TV audience. Ours is just, it's just a really good time.
Yeah, and I mean, especially because you guys are on the Warner lot, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, just being on the Warner lot is just, it's a surreal experience each time. It's honestly as weird as it sounds to say, it's one of my favorite places in the entire world.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, every time I come on the Warner lot, it's calming to me, and I don't know why.
That's so funny. Maybe it's the Animaniacs cartoons from your childhood. It could just be the idea that so many cool things were made here. I get the same feeling. Every time I drive on the lot and they let me on the lot is a bit of a thrill. I am not yet accustomed to this.
I kind of understand that feeling to a degree where over the summer I was actually at Warner interviewing for some jobs, and the first day that I walked on and I had to walk past Ellen's sound stages and everything was the day they had announced she was going to be hosting the Oscars. And it was just kind of like, holy shit, like, That's Ellen. She's all right here. And at the same time, they were painting Zack Snyder's parking spot up by his little bungalow, and I was just like, oh wow, like it was very surreal.
Oh yeah, I feel that way too. Knowing, you know, I'm a big fan of Ellen. I think she's great, and she's right across the way. So I think that's super cool.
So now, as you guys are prepping for these upcoming shows, who are some of the upcoming guests? I know I was looking at next week's lineup, and I saw Judd Apatow, T.J. Miller. Who are some of the others that you have coming on?
That's a good question. It's been such a blur because we've picked so many of these guests. I'm so excited that Matt Berninger from The National, he's the lead singer of The National, it's my favorite band, did a really funny piece with us. Paul Scheer from The League is on. I might not be able to rattle these off quickly. Who else is on our show, Drew? Yeah, we'd have to pull the name. And this doesn't mean that I'm not excited about it. I was actually just talking to Drew. The only way that I can survive this is always just like keep moving forward, yeah. always moving forward. So we do these things, we bank them, and then we move forward. I remember Jess St. Clair and Lennon Parham were on together, which was awesome. Jay Larson and Ryan Sickler was another duo that we had on, which was fantastic. You mentioned TJ, who's one of my dearest friends, and that was like one of those interviews I was proud of that we got, like a little bit more podcasty and a little less late nighty, which is something that we're trying to do, have like some genuine conversations, talk about some things that are funny but not necessarily in that anecdote late night sort of way, where there's that pressure to be, you know, have a payoff every 3-5 seconds. So we had, like, some really nice real moments there. So, you know, basically, whenever there's something in my life that I'm obsessed with, we start seeing if they'll come on the show and do something with us, whether it's a sketch, like Mark Paul Gosselaar from, you know, Saved by the Bell, obviously, and Franklin and Bash. He came on and shot a sketch with us. Joel McHale shot a sketch with us. So it's not just guests on the show, it's actually people that we get to work with.
Yeah, and I actually just barely watched Mark's Street Fighter sketch, and that one was absolutely hilarious. So I enjoyed that one.
I'm so glad. There's a bunch more. We did all the original characters.
Oh, I look forward to seeing the rest of them.
Yeah, I hope you like them.
So now you kind of mentioned, you know, kind of going towards more of the podcasting element of the interviews. And that was something I did notice right away, especially with like your interviews with Conan as well as with Marc Maron. That, I mean, it felt just kind of more of, you know, we're at the dinner table, let's talk. And I personally really enjoyed that.
That's kind of what we're going for. The whole thing, I want to, you know, redefine the late night thing. Not so much so that we're not recognized as a late night show, but enough that people will be like, oh, that's its own thing. There's so many people that do the traditional late night show so well, and there are people that are about to be doing the traditional late night show so well. I have full faith that Seth Meyers is going to be fantastic. Jimmy just took over the Tonight Show, and that's fantastic. So we just feel like that's covered. So we're trying to do something a little bit unique. We need to stand out. We need to be our own thing. And as somebody who likes to have these really like kind of longer, in-depth conversations that albeit get edited down to about 6 minutes for our show, we can still try and bring that tone into the program and have people less promotional, less gimmicky, and like I said, a little less burdened with the novel, with the idea of being funny every 5 seconds. So we can have that podcast phenomenon kind of transfer over to a television format. And of course, even though the show is, you know, half an hour, so much of it lives online. So when Paul Scheer did the show, for example, we talked for about 45 minutes, and we cut that into a bunch of different segments, some that'll be on the show and then some that'll live online, so people can find all the little goodnesses hidden around the place.
So and I've liked that you've had a lot of online presence with it, because I've actually gone back and watched a lot of stuff through the website as well. Even when I've missed stuff, and I love that I know, you know, I can just go right there. There's going to be plenty of videos, and a lot of the times, you know, extra content that I wouldn't have seen online. And it's been something that's great with the site that I've really enjoyed, and I'm sure everybody else has as well.
Yeah. I kind of, you know, instead of going against that, I was just reading something this morning about how, you know, back in the day, everyone would watch Carson, obviously, and Carson was such a superstar for that reason. But these days, shows get broken down into little clips that people either share or they don't. You know, a successful late night show or a successful sketch show or really any type of show is nowadays, I think, should be judged on how much, at least in part, how much it's shared. Is it in your feed? Is it on your Facebook? Is it on your Twitter? Are people talking about it in that regard? So instead of kind of fighting against that and resenting the idea that people wouldn't watch us necessarily as a complete piece, we're trying to make each episode a presentation of, you know, 3 to 5 things that we would like to see trending, including the monologue, not just because the monologue might be about Miley Cyrus, which it wouldn't be, but because it would be about something that you'd want to pass around just because it made you laugh, just in the same way that you would pass around a sketch or some other type of viral video.
Yeah, and I think you guys have definitely had a great success with making a lot of these videos, viral videos, especially even as you did the Batman for College Humor series. I mean,
yeah.
I saw that filled my Facebook feed probably for about 2 weeks.
I have the same thing. Obviously, people were tagging me in it, but I was seeing other people sharing it, and it just made me so glad. It's a funny thing, man. I hope that's one of the reasons why TBS likes us is that they, you know, a lot of people say make a viral video, and we never really set out to make a viral video. We always just want to make the thing that makes us laugh. I'm just very fortunate that my staff and myself share a sensibility that can be consumed kind of in a popular way. So that certainly when we're making something like the Street Fighter videos or the Batman videos, or we're going to do a Sherlock parody, or hopefully we're going to do a True Detective parody. These are the things that we want to, like, play off the idea that these are in the zeitgeist, this is in the collective consciousness, and play with that, make some good jokes about those things.
Now, when you guys started the show, was this an idea that you came to, now it's Conan that produces it. Did you go to Conan with this idea, or did Conan, you know, kind of come to you with everything?
It was a perfect confluence of two things, in that Conan was looking for someone to be on after him, and Jeff Ross is producer and Conoco in general, and I was obviously looking to make my own show. And then I met with Nick Bernstein, and Nick Bernstein is my producer, and I had been making these videos with Oren Brimmer, who's another one of our EPs. So it really can keep me up at night when I think about the fortuitous timing, meaning this show, you know, a talk show has an interview element, it has a sketch element, it has a stand-up comedy element. And those were the things that when the opportunity was there, I had been doing each of those things for about 10 years on average. Not the interview, I had been doing the podcast for about 150 episodes. But that, you know, that's quite a bit of talking to people.
Yeah.
But the sketch element had been around for about 6 years, and I had been doing stand-up for about 12 years. When the show came around. So when I met with Conan, and then when Conan and I met with TBS, we basically were saying, the show already exists, we just need a home to put all these pieces. And Conan got it, and Nick Bernstein got it, and then Michael Wright and Steve Coonan and all the great people over at Turner got it and gave us a shot. And I'm so glad they're continuing to give us a shot, because as everyone knows, these things take time to grow and to find their truest voice, and they're giving us that opportunity here, I think, with the second order.
And I'm really glad that they did give you that opportunity. I mean, not to get gushy or fanboy here, but really one, you know, you're one of the few comics that I think I've followed you long enough that as it was announced that, you know, they did give it the green light on everything, it was like a feeling of just, you know, complete jubilee that this was taking off for you. To the point that I actually remember where I was when I read that it was being picked up.
Wow.
I was actually at Paramount. I'm just sitting outside of the coffee shop, and it popped up on my newsfeed.
See, I mean, I think, first of all, thank you so much for saying that. And then the reason why I can understand that is there is a strong bond that can be made when you do something like a podcast where so much of my personal experience and my feelings and thoughts are shared so publicly, and then add that with stand-up and add that with sketch. I'm so grateful to have so many fans that of course consume that material and then built that connection. So when I got the show, that was something that was really and is still really moving to hear that people were, almost feel like we got our show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's this communal sense that it is the Pete Holmes show or whatever, but it's this endorsement of something, you know, real. I know it can be one-sided, obviously, other than doing live stand-up shows and visiting fans that way, but I think when people connect with somebody, even if it is just through entertaining things, that can be a real thing and a real type of relationship, a parasocial one, though it may be.
And I think that's definitely true. I mean, with a lot of different comedians and especially podcasters, that's really becoming a strong medium.
Yeah.
I mean,
how happy was I when Mark Maron got a show? I know Mark, but I know Mark so much better because of the podcast. So I know real Mark and podcast Mark are the same guy. But I mean, like, podcast Mark and I have spent so much more time together. So when his show gets a second season or whatever, it's a huge deal for all of us. We're like, my friend Mark got a show, even if you don't know him, or my friend podcast Pete got a show. And that's why, you know, when I tour and do stand-up, the feeling nowadays in the audience isn't like, let's go watch Pete, I hope he's funny. It's more like, let's go hang out with our friend Pete, whom I've never met, but know more about him than his own mother.
And I think that really is the feeling. I know when I actually met Mark for the first time, it wasn't like I was meeting, you know, this comic that I didn't know anything about that I had just idolized. It was like, hey, Mark, how's it going? Congrats on, you know, the show. And it was weird that I could go up and talk to him, just like I had known him forever.
Well, that's what a comedian, I think a good comedian is going for, is that, you know, a rock star, you're going for, like, such a huge inflated personality that if you saw them, and I'm quoting Jerry Seinfeld here, if you saw Bono at the supermarket, you would kind of, like, avoid Bono. I don't know if that's as true as it maybe was in the 80s. Like, I don't mean because of his fame. I mean because people now are much more brash and would go up and take photos and insist on these things. But, you know, you're going for, like, a big, inaccessible kind of thing. I'm a rock star. But a comedian is looking for that connection where you get to the point where it's like, why wouldn't I go up and say hello to Jerry? He's been in my house so much. I know him so well. But that's the type of connection the comedian is going for.
So, and when you were actually on Maron's show, I didn't know you were going to be on that episode. My wife and I are watching the show, and right as it goes into that scene where you're in the agent's office, my wife and I both yelled out, "Pete!"
So,
yeah, we had no idea that you were going to be on the show.
Yeah, like I said, it's just like if somebody asked me last interview I was doing, they were talking about being the boss. And I was saying that a comedian's job is to, like, make fun of bosses or positions of authority. Similarly, I'm not, like, some celebrity who, don't worry, guys, I got this, and I'll run off and slay the dragon while you guys stay in the village. The fans and the comedian are, like, on the same team. Like, a win for the comedian is a win for the team, and there is that closeness there, I think, if you allow it. So, whereas in the past, it would be like, you know, a superstar, a celebrity guy, and he's popping into a thing. I think now, you hopefully get that feeling of like, oh, our buddy is on the show that I like with my other podcast buddy. And I think that can be a nice feeling, a good communal feeling.
It definitely is. Now with Conan, you know, being a producer on this, I know you always, you know, idolize Conan as well. What was that like to start working with him and kind of have him be your boss?
Yeah, I mean, it's still very surreal. I never really get used to hanging out with him or being near him. Being near him, that's so romantic. I just mean I can pretend pretty well, and I've told him this. Like, I can just act like I'm not freaking out or whatever, as to not freak him out. But the truth is it's somebody that I've always measured my own career by, and I was like, I just want to be on his show. And to have him give me my own opportunity here is beyond surreal. But then he's not just like, he didn't wind the watch and let it go. He remains involved. He remains available. And it's just kind of, you know, I've said this before, so forgive me, but, it was a while ago. It was like loving cereal, and then Captain Crunch comes to your door and asks you to make your own cereal. It's so weird to see the real-life Captain Crunch. And that's how I think of Conan, as a living cartoon.
I think that embodies him the best.
I think he would agree with that.
So now you've put out two albums over the last few years, Impregnated with Wonder and most recently Nice Try, The Devil. Are you going to be...
Thank you for saying that correctly, by the way.
are you going to be doing much on the road with the show and working towards a new special? Or are you kind of straying back from some of the road work?
You know, it's funny. Stand-up is such an... It's like a necessary... what's the word? Material that I'm made up of. You know, it's like carbon or magnesium or potassium. It's like something I really need. So even though the show, not in a bad way, by the way, it's not like I'm a sad clown that needs people laughing. I need to, like, commune and connect with people and share ideas in that way, which I think anyone can relate to. So even though the show is very, very much a fulfilling experience, I still find the need to go out and do some jokes that might not be right for our show, or even do jokes that I've done on the show but do the longer version of them or explore them a little bit differently. So inevitably, I think that will lead to a tour or a new hour at some point, because there's just no substitute for that. When you're going around and you have new jokes to share with people, and you get to go to these great cities, you know, Portland and Austin and Seattle and Chicago and Boston and New York, and just kind of, like I said, visit those fans and spend time with them, that can be wonderful. Not to leave out other cities, those are just the ones I thought of.
So, well, before we let you go here,
yeah, I'd like to.
Yeah, before we let you go here, Pete, just kind of what advice do you have for people for younger comics, young writers that want to find a career, you know, doing whether it's comedy or writing on a show? What advice do you have for them to really, you know, go forward with it?
I think this might be a strange place to start, but it's like you can't compare yourself to other people. Because that will slow you down and it will eventually, I think, calcify you and stop you from doing what you want to do. Like that sort of bitterness or jealousy or comparison can really steal somebody's growth. I always like looking at people like Mark Ruffalo, who I think went on 6,000 auditions or something before he really broke. It might have been 600, I'm not sure. but it was years and years of work. So don't compare yourself, don't get bitter. This is something Bill Burr told me, which is keep your head down and don't be a dick, which means just do the work and you know, don't be a dick. It's, you know, self-explanatory. And then, you know, you got to do things. I feel like people, especially these days in the age of Final Cut and YouTube and all this stuff that you can put stuff out there, when you're ready, start doing things, you know, on a smaller scale and then build a body of work because, like I said, in my experience with this show, when we pitched it, we had to say, don't you think Pete would be good at interviewing people? It's, here's 500 hours of Pete interviewing people. People these days want to see that you can do things. People know that driven, creative people will find ways to do things. So as silly as it sounds, if you want to do things, then you keep your head down, then you're not a dick, then you don't compare yourself to other people and just do your work. I think people can find a nice way in here.
Perfect. Well, I think that's definitely great advice, and I mean, I had heard you say something similar about that before, and I mean, I've definitely taken that to heart as I'm actually getting ready to release a web series in the next few months here. And we all had to kind of take that to heart of just hunker down, don't be a dick, and let's have fun.
Yeah, and let's have fun. And honestly, I'm so glad you said that, and I'm happy to hear that. It's like, make the art that you wish was there, that you want to see. Make the show you want to see. Make the web series you want to see. Don't make the things that you think people might want to see. At a certain point, that might become a consideration. But for now, just like, make the things that make you laugh. Right? When people write stand-up, it's like, put yourself in the audience. When would you laugh? And if the answer is you wouldn't, you keep working. Or if the show isn't interesting, or if the idea isn't interesting to you, don't assume it'll be interesting to other people. So just keep making it for the art's sake, not to be famous, not to be rich, not to meet girls, but to make the work for its own sake, for fulfillment, for the purpose of life.
Well, thank you so much
Typical
for taking...
interview. Yeah. Talk about late night, get to the meaning of life.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time today, Pete. I know you guys are busy getting ready to get the new show or the new set of shows going here. So, and you guys are on weeknights at midnight, 11 Central on TBS, right after Conan.
Yes, we are on at midnight, four nights a week after Conan, starting February 24th.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, Pete, and we'll get this sent out to you just as soon as we have it posted later this week.
That's great. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Yeah, you as well. We'll see you, Pete. Thanks.
Bye.